And so Sarah finds that her teddy bear Lancelot is missing, and she throws a BF, right? Yep.
She's going to write a letter.
She's going to write a letter. Hello, Rebels! Welcome to the Allied Rebels podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Roxy.
And I'm Dee.
Hey, Dee. We missed you.
Good. You better. No. I missed doing this so much. You don't even know.
Yeah. I had such a blast recording with my sister, but I definitely missed you, so I'm glad you're back.
Same.
But yeah, I am super excited about today's episode because it reminds me of the babe with the power. We're talking about the movie Labyrinth.
Woo! Let's go.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love this movie. It's one of my faves. But first, it's been a minute. So what's new with you, Dee?
Well, you know, I've been spending a lot of quality time with my fam, seeing them grow up, you know, from babies to infants to toddlers to, you know, children to teens to young adults. Oh, I'm talking about Sims 4. I've been playing a lot.
You lived a life, man.
I've been playing a lot of Sims 4, and I started playing Dreamlight Valley again because...
Oh, yeah, I remember this one.
I rage quit.
Is it because of the loading time?
That's annoying, but no, it would randomly stop, I swear, like every hour or so.
Oh yeah, that's glitchy.
And I was like, okay, I'll try it again, and maybe it won't. And it quit on me twice, but that's not nearly as much as it used to. So, you know, yeah. I guess. But it's still fun, and I still like it, and so
good.
I'll do it. And then I saw the D&D movie.
Ooh, how'd you like it?
I loved it.
Of course. Uh-huh.
Except for there's a couple parts I didn't really like because I had planned on using things like that in my campaign that I'm doing currently.
Oh, so now they're going to think that you took it off the movie. Mm-hmm. Took it from the movie, I mean. Yeah,
which I did not because I had it planned in there.
I hope you dated it. So you're like, see, I have the proof.
No, it's not. I should. Now I should, but it's fine.
It's okay. Your word is law, so it's fine.
Exactly. What, are you going to argue with your DM?
Yeah, that's not a smart choice. Let's make good choices, people.
Yeah. And then, you know, I met the love of my life myself. So, yeah. What's new with you?
Wait. Hold on. Wait a second. The love of your life?
Yeah, myself. What?
What?
I learned to love myself.
Oh, well, that's great. That's awesome.
No, I was just seeing if you were listening to what I was saying.
I did. Girl, bye. I know I am.
The double take, you know, what? Wait, the love of your life? I'm kidding. You know I would tell you about anything before we recorded it.
Of course.
Anyway, so what's new with you, Roxy?
Okay, so I finally saw all the John Wick movies. Really excited to go see the fourth one. But yeah, I mean, they're just like kind of a, you don't have to really think about the movie. You just see Keanu Reeves beat some people up, not say a lot, and everyone's scared of him. So that's totally cool. But I also watched the Super Mario movie. Mm-hmm. Freaking loved it. I got to eat some more words because I know I was really apprehensive about.
I was going to bring that up.
Yeah, Chris Pratt's performance. And I think his was the only one I was really concerned about. Mm-hmm. I just got to say, I was blown away by everybody's performance. Honestly. I really had such a blast. It was so much fun. You know how you get that environment where everyone's having a good time? That's literally how it was. I almost blacked out twice at one point because I was laughing so hard. And it was just so fun. Like, everybody, you'd hear people say comments and like, oh, there's this character or there's that. And it's just so fun. So I loved it. It's definitely one of my, I want to say, it's a top like 20 movie right now for me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I really, really liked it. It was really fun. Like, I want to go see it again.
There's no possible way it could have beat the one with John Leguizamo. You're just wrong.
Hey, you know what? I love that movie still for a whole different reason. But yeah. Oh my gosh.
I do love it. I don't care.
Yeah, same. There's a lot of people that hate it, but I understand why.
Yeah.
But it's a nostalgia thing, and it was fun in its own way. Yes. So, gotta say that. And then I've also been playing Resident Evil 4 the remake, and that's been really fun too. We're on our second playthrough right now, and yeah, I really like it, and I won't talk too much about it because I know we're gonna make an episode in the next couple months about it, so, but I'm really stoked about it. And then we went back to our 90 Day Fiance binges. It's so bad, but it's so good. It's like definitely my guiltiest pleasure, even more than like the Top Chef or like cooking shows. It's so bad, but it's so good. Like, yeah. it's one of those times where, like, you know, I try to be a nice person and not talk that bad about people, but this is a time where I can throw it all away and be like, that person's a piece of shit. Mm-hmm. And like, either you're having fun with them or you're judging them really harshly. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah. I don't really watch those type of shows, but like, if I walk to my mom's room and she's watching it, I'll watch it for like 5-10 minutes with her. And then I'll make a snide comment here or there. And my mom goes, go away. Okay, just let me enjoy this.
Is it about the show or one of her favorite characters, maybe?
It's whatever. But, you know, like, just.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I don't know. Is his name Nick or do I just call him No Neck Nick?
No. Oh, Mayohead Ed?
Yes, Ed. Yeah, I call him No Neck Nick. Because he doesn't have a neck. He's just. You know?
Yeah.
And he's such a douchebag.
Oh, he is. He's just so gross and creepy. Yeah. But
he's like.
Yeah. Yeah. Gross.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But those are the type of men I attract.
No, stop it. Need to wear some Prolin or something, but girl, bye. No, but it's funny because, like, my boyfriend and I were talking about the past seasons, you know, because we literally watch all of them. This is the newest one that came out last season, and we're like, you know, it's funny because, like, they get into fights and stuff, and like, we're talking about they do this show where they come back at the end of the season and they all meet each other and they all kind of tell their stories, clear some things in the air because there's always drama, and sometimes they get into arguments with each other, the couples, and I'm like, they should do like a Super Mario style, like a Super Smash Bros style brawl. And he was like, yeah, and Mayohead, it's gonna be like the Mario of the franchise because he's like short and
nobody likes him.
Well, he'd be like the Wario, I guess, or the Bowser, actually.
Oh,
yeah. But but anyway, yeah, that's so funny that you knew about him, too.
Yes. And now everybody in my house calls him No Neck Nick. So
it's Mayohead Ed.
It's No Neck Nick.
Fine. But agree to disagree.
I can see why there's not, you know, he's not called that. Because, you know, his name's not Nick. But he still has no neck.
Yeah.
So, No Neck
Ned.
Ned. There we go. That's no perfect. Neck Ned.
All right. So let's move on to Labyrinth.
Whoop, whoop.
Ooh. Your mommy and the babe. Babe with the power.
Almost said the babe with the room.
With the room?
I don't know. Whoa. Okay.
Whoa.
Okay. Whoa. Don't judge me.
All right. Let's settle down, people. Labyrinth is the wonderful 1986 musical fantasy film directed by Jim Henson with George Lucas as executive producer, which I never knew about that. But when I was younger, I never really cared about the credits. So.
Right.
It was based on conceptual designs by Brian Froud, and the film was written by Terry Jones. Many of its characters are played by puppets produced by Jim Henson's Creature Shop. That was always really cool. I always liked those puppets, though.
I love, like, the Jim Henson puppet style.
Me
though
too.
It's just, it feels more whimsical than a lot of other puppets that are around, you know?
Yeah, I agree. In Labyrinth, Sarah embarks on a quest to reach the center of an enormous otherworldly maze to rescue her infant half-brother Toby, whom she wished away to Jareth, or rather King Jareth.
The King of the Goblins?
The King of the Goblins. Yeah, mistakes were made. Lots of regrets.
Regrets ensued.
Exactly. It was released in theaters on June 27th, 1986 in the US and on December 2nd, 1986 in the UK. Not sure about the time differences, but
Yeah, that's almost 6 months apart. Like, that's kind of cray cray. But then again, maybe You know, they had to use all those tugboats to get him over there because airplanes weren't really around then. I'm totally joking, okay? Jesus Christ, okay?
Girl, you had me going for a second. Oh my gosh, dude. The film started as a collaboration between Henson and Froud following their previous collaboration with The Dark Crystal, which came out in 1982, which I know I've seen, but I really have no recollection of it. I really don't, but I know I've seen it. I know I have.
I loved The Dark Crystal. And I think the reason I liked Labyrinth so much as a kid was because of Dark Crystal.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. It has the same vibe, so mm-hmm. I get it. Terry Jones of Monty Python wrote the first draft of the film's script early in 1984, drawing on Froud's sketches for inspiration. It was shot from April to September of 1985 on location in Upper Nyack, Piermont, and Haverstraw, New York, and at Elstree Studios and West Wycombe Park in the United Kingdom.
I don't know why I thought you were going to say in West Philadelphia.
Born and raised. Yeah.
I really did. I was expecting it. It's like, oh. She didn't say that.
Weird.
The New York Times reported that Labyrinth had a budget of $25 million, which, you know, in today's money, that's nothing for a movie.
No, which is even more impressive because of all the puppets that they used.
Uh-huh.
Like all the actual, not CGI effects, but actual, God, what's
physical.
There's a word for it. Uh-huh. Practical effects.
Oh my god.
Why was that difficult?
I don't know. We both fucked up on that.
Yeah. Oh my god. Okay. So anyway. Yeah, it's so impressive when they use the practical films versus like the, you know.
The practical films.
Oh my god, I can't talk. So it's even more impressive when you think about how they use so many practical effects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I mean I guess CGI is expensive too, so let's face it. But I don't know. It's interesting.
It makes way more sense for that type of film for it to be, almost said prototype. Oh my god. Why can't we get this word?
I don't know, dude.
We are broken. We are broken. Oh my god.
Practical. I know. I can't. I don't understand. I still like over here thinking about why did we forget that word?
Yeah. Anyway, yes, it makes more sense for them to use practical effects for this type of movie because it's Jim Henson. You have to use practical effects with him. It just makes sense.
Exactly.
But the film underperformed at the U.S. box office, grossing only $12.9 million during its U.S. theatrical run.
Oof.
However, it was successful in the United Kingdom, grossing over $34 million worldwide. So, you know, it was not appreciated in the States, but in the UK, they have bigger brains sometimes, a lot of the times, like a majority, but like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, okay. Yeah. You can tell it's been a minute since I recorded.
We're back to our shenanigans. Yeah.
But yeah, they just have better taste on things.
Yes. Quite nobly.
Indubitably. Darling. Yeah, if people are like, that is not a UK accent, and that's okay. But Labyrinth was first met with mixed critical response upon its release, which contributed to the difficult period of Jim Henson's career, according to his son, Brian Henson. And I think I remember hearing about this, obviously not when it was happening because I was a little too young to remember that. But
you have a big brain then. And I was like, damn, you were in diapers.
I wasn't even in diapers when this came out.
You weren't even born.
But like, I remember it was kind of like the turning point of his career. People were starting to think, oh, is he? Has Jim Henson lost his touch? Does he really know what he's doing anymore?
Like the heat burnt out.
Yeah, kind of. However, it was a success in the home movies and TV broadcasts. So because of that, it gained a large occult following, which, you know, if you know The Labyrinth, that makes sense for it to have an occult following. It just has that vibe about it.
Yeah, I always remember this movie growing up. It was like either always on TV. Mm-hmm. I believe we had a VHS at some point too. But yeah, I just remember this was on all the time. So it's kind of news to me that it wasn't super popular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy because us growing up, it was a hit movie. Mm-hmm. Or at least it was with our friend group and our families. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Anyway.
People be wildin'.
The film had been adapted on many variety of media, including books, video games, and comics. Tokyo Pop published a 4-volume comic sequel called Return to Labyrinth between 2006 and 2010. I did not know about that. I need to go look that up. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure it's probably too rich for my blood to own. And Archaea Entertainment published a comic prequel, Labyrinth Coronation, between 2018 and 2019. In January 2016, it was announced that a sequel was in development, which screenwriter Nicole Perlman described as more of a spin-off in the same fictional universe. Which, you know, we haven't heard hide nor hair from it, so I don't think it's happening. However, it did sound promising for a little while because Jennifer Connelly said she was in talks of possibly rejoining for the spinoff, but we haven't heard any updates recently.
I know. That'd be awesome though.
Yeah.
Labyrinth was nominated at the British Academy Film Awards for Best Special Visual Effects and received 2 Saturn Award nominations for Best Fantasy Film and Best Costumes, which I fucking love their mm-hmm. costumes, especially in that there's a scene where they're in a masquerade and it's just amazing. Everyone's like wearing fancy ball gowns and I love it. It's an aesthetic. Love mm-hmm. it. The film was also nominated for the Hugo Award for Best Dramatic Presentation. In 2008, the American Film Institute nominated Labyrinth for inclusion on its top 10 fantasy films list. Labyrinth is ranked 72nd on Empire's The 80 Best 80s Movies and 26th on Time Out's The 50 Best Fantasy Movies. So it means it's pretty cool.
Except for, to me, it's way higher for the 80 Best 80. Only 72nd? Piss my ass.
I will say, I agree with you. Yeah, should be higher than that, but, you know.
Whatever. We didn't make the list.
Which we should. We should get on that. In 2019, The Telegraph named it as one of the 77 best kids films of all time, which, again, should be higher than that, but... or, actually, we don't know the rank in that, but it should be number one.
Well, it wouldn't go with number one, but it should be pretty high.
Yeah. Well, who would be number one? I guess I can't think of any movies right now off the top of my head, but...
I would
say... Oh, I guess of all time. So, holy yeah. shit. Never mind.
Yeah.
A hey, Disney that's pretty movie good. Or... That's pretty good. 77?
Yeah.
Out of all time, that's actually really, really good.
Yeah, that's what I was like, it's okay.
I was thinking...
the gun.
Well, yeah, because I was thinking we were still like, it was like the 80s, like, or like the era or something. But hey.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So let's go over some of the actors. We have the wonderful, amazing David Bowie.
Rip.
He was Jareth, the Goblin King, the powerful and enigmatic king of the goblins, to whom protagonist Sarah Williams wishes away her baby brother Toby.
Yeah.
Let me tell you. He's the first person that I remember having a crush on. I swear. And I always remember him. And I love David Bowie. He's awesome.
He was very eccentric. Very.
Verily.
Verily. And then we have Miss Jennifer Connelly as Sarah. Sarah was an imaginative teenager who wished for the goblins from her favorite story to take away her baby brother Toby. Which, you know... We'll talk about the feelings we had between Sarah when we were younger versus rewatching it as an adult
later. There's so many emotions and so many conflicted ideas we both had, like then versus now. I'm like, yeah. Huh, interesting. And there's Toby Froud as Toby, the baby brother of Sarah. He's the babe with the power, which I think it's cool because I didn't know like they had the same name, the actor and the character.
Yeah, it was, I think done on purpose because the baby probably wouldn't have responded otherwise.
That makes so much sense.
Then we have Sherry Weiser, who was the body actor, and Brian Henson, who was the voice of Hoggle. He is gruff and ill-tempered and unhelpful when Sarah first approaches him. He is first seen peeing into a pond until Sarah makes her presence known, startling him in the process. I'm sorry. this part of the movie, I when I was a kid, I did not understand the first time I saw it that he was peeing.
Yeah. So, I don't think I did either. And you know what? Maybe, like, because I watched the TV version a lot, they probably edited that part out.
Probably.
But I don't know. I never really thought about it until, like, you know.
We were also girls. So true. We didn't think about,
yeah, you could have just been squirting a water gun in there or something.
But anyway, Hoggle then begins spraying the fairies with a spray can repellent, which really kind of horrified Sarah. Like, why the hell are you spraying fairies? They're fairies. They're beautiful, harmless creatures.
They were so pretty and sparkly, but I think they bit you or something. But yeah. You know what? In hindsight, it was probably just him. He was just a little dirty creep. That's why.
Probably. Put your dick away, man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Needless to say, Hoggle is a catch.
Okay. Oh,
yeah. Mm. And then we have Rob Mills, who is a body actor, and Ron Muick, who is the voice for Ludo. And he is the giant but kind-hearted beast whom Sarah rescues from Jared's goblins. He joins her in her quest to rescue her half-brother Toby. He is a coward, but he has a special power where he can summon rocks to help Sarah and his friends.
Yeah, I love him.
Me too. He's just a big teddy bear, and I just love him. I just always want to give him a hug.
Me too. He looks so cuddly and warm. Then we have David Allen Barclay, body actor, and David, I know his name because the nanny.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Shaughnessy.
Anemone.
I know I'm going to say it wrong because I keep fucking it up. David Shaughnessy. Shaughnessy. I nailed that. He was the voice of Didymus. Another one of my favorite characters.
Same.
He's a fox terrier in Labyrinth, and he believes he is a great and chivalrous knight, which, if you've seen the movie, you know.
He is a badass.
He is a fucking badass. He has little man syndrome to the T.
Hey, he's a short king.
He is a short king. I was just about to say, but he's a short king.
Exactly.
No fucking knight there. Well, actually, yeah, knight, because knights were more. But you know what I mean.
Exactly.
And he has a canine steed named Ambrosius.
Ambrosius!
And he has the job of guarding the bridge that crosses over to the Bog of Eternal Stench, which...
He took very seriously.
He really did. And I did not envy his job because he had to be by it all the time.
But then again, he never could smell it. Either that he got used to it or he just, I don't know, it didn't bother him.
Yeah.
So a little synopsis of the film. 16-year-old Sarah Williams recites from a book titled The Labyrinth in the park with her dog Merlin, which that's such a cute name. He's such a cute, fluffy dog.
Mm-hmm.
But is unable to remember the last line. At this point, they are watched by a barn owl. Stalker much?
Yeah.
And there's like a clock tower that chimes and she realizes, oh shit, I was supposed to be watching Toby.
I fucked up.
So she runs home and it starts raining and it's pouring and her stepmother's there waiting for them because the parents had a little date night. So Sarah is like super annoyed when her stepmother, all she says is like, hey, you were supposed to be here on time, you know? And then Sarah gets really pissy about it, which this is the part we're talking about. Uh-huh. That I remember when I was young, I was like, oh my God, the stepmom is such a bitch. Like, let her live her life. Damn. And now as a grown-ass adult, I'm like, well, I like to say grown-ass adult, but who am I kidding? I'm still a child. You know?
At heart, yes.
At heart. But I will say, I'm like, she's kind of a little self-centered, a little selfish. Because if she, you know, committed to this, you should be there on time. And don't give her sass. And she wasn't really rude at first. Like, the stepmom.
Yeah.
I didn't really think she was rude.
Yeah, but as a kid, we both thought she was being rude as hell.
But now I'm like, dude, Sarah, chill out.
Calm your fucking non-existent tits.
She was so dramatic, dude. Yeah. I mean, she did seem like a theater kid. She was.
But
I'm like, okay, let's tone it down. We're not on stage.
We
chill
could
out.
See quite a bit of our friends in her room.
I could see myself in there. I was telling you, I was like, that's a little embarrassing. Oh. Yeah, that was woe is me moment right there. But anyway, so then they leave and Sarah finds Toby, like, the thing is, like, they even put him to bed. Mm-hmm. Like, she literally just had to be present at the house, right? Yep. And probably act out her wildest fantasies in her bedroom. That's all she had to do, right? Mm-hmm. And so Sarah finds that her teddy bear, Lancelot, is missing, and she throws a BF, right? Yep.
She's going to write a letter.
She's going to write a letter.
Dear mom and dad, I am so freaking pissed.
I love that. Oh my God, so great. Seriously, though. Again, when I was her age, I'd get that too. I'd fight for a fucking pair of socks if my sister wore it. It was game over, man. So I get it.
Game over, man.
Game over. So she's super frustrated. You know, she goes over to the crib and, you know, he starts crying because, I mean, I'd be scared too if this bitch barges into my room and I'm like, where the fuck a bear at? I mean, she didn't do that, but, you know.
Where the fuck's my goddamn teddy bear?
So she takes it and then she starts being all frustrated about it. And she starts like reciting stuff from the book. Basically, pity party. I can bear it no longer. Goblin King, wherever you may be, take this child of mine far away from me. And there's a line in the book that you have to say, and then the...
like, say the line.
Yeah, so the goblins, like, come because they hear her start saying the line, and they're ready to do their bidding, right?
Ready and pounce.
But Sarah, being Sarah, keeps forgetting these lines because she needs a book, and she starts saying the line, but she forgets it. She goes like, I wish they would come and get you, but she doesn't finish it. And then as she leaves, she turns around and she does say the line. She says, I wish the goblins would come and take you away right now. So she starts walking to her room and then it's dead silent.
Mary Shaw's coming.
I know, right? Beware. Stare.
Just don't scream, Sarah. Whatever you do, let her have the baby.
She's dramatic, so she's fucked. Ah! Yep. So then he is taken away by the goblins. And then Sarah goes into her room and she starts wigging out. And then all of a sudden, Jareth comes in. This fucking entrance suit that he does, though. Uh-huh. Fucking amazing. It's totally David Bowie. This owl comes flying into her room and all of a sudden he has this cape and then bam, I'm here, bitch. What up? Mm-hmm. And basically tells her, hey, this is what you wanted. Be careful what you wish for, bitch. You know what I'm saying? And so, yeah, he took the baby and, you know, then she's like, okay, you know what? I fucked up. Actually, I kind of need him back.
I don't want to be grounded.
Yeah. Life would really be over. But basically, Jareth then gives her 13 hours to solve the labyrinth because he has the baby in his castle, which is in the middle of the labyrinth, before he is turned into a goblin forever. And then Sarah meets the dwarf named Hoggle, and she's having a hard time finding the entrance to the labyrinth, and he ends up helping her, unreluctantly, of course. And this part I really love in the beginning. We were talking about how it's so beautiful.
Yes.
It's just when you talk about this movie, this is why it won so many accolades and why it was nominated, because it really is visually stunning. Mm-hmm. These particular scenes in the movie, it's like really sparkly and I love it. It just has this really cool feel to it. And it just feels old and magical to me. So I love it.
Yeah, I was going
to
say like almost ancient magic
is
in there somewhere.
Yeah, for sure. And so she says her line, which I really love. It's a piece of cake. And then she starts running and she cannot find an entrance to this, right? Nope. And so at this part, she meets this little worm and he has a line too that I think we say sometimes. He goes, hello.
Hello.
And the little worm ends up helping her because she can't find the entrance and she's literally standing right in front of it. So it's really cool because like it's like a puzzle. You can't really see it or camouflages.
Camouflage,
right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, and the great part is he says basically implies there's two directions. One will lead you straight there and the other will take you further into the labyrinth. And of course, she took the wrong one. Because if she would have taken the right direction, she would, boop, there's the labyrinth.
Yeah.
Or well, there's the castle.
But he told her though. He told her not to take that one. He says, don't take that one. Never take that one. And then she's like, okay. So then she ends up going the other way. And he's like, oof, that's good thing she didn't take that way. That would let her straight to the castle.
Yes. Because she asked about the labyrinth.
Yes, exactly.
So like he led her the wrong way.
Yeah.
A bunch of stuff happens. She starts to use her lipstick to mark arrows on the ground, and that pissed the little things living underneath it off. And so they would take the stone they had and then turn it the wrong direction. And then she just kept doing it, and she finally realized it. But, you know, she was really frustrated. And then eventually she meets Hoggle again, and they end up in the sewer. And she persuades Hoggle into helping her by giving him her bracelet. And so they're going to find their way out of the sewer. And then Jareth comes and he tries to crush them to death. And that was going to be a problem for both of them.
I love that. I also love this entrance too, though, because he's like posing as like a beggar or something.
Yes.
And then he gets up and he takes the costume off and he's like, nothing, 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 tra-la-la. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I love it so much. All the like little ways he like appears in different areas and throughout this whole movie, I love it. We watched it through Discord, so we played it at the same time, and it's just like all these new little things you pick up every time you watch it. I just love it so much.
You know, I love it.
Anyway, so they get out of the sewer, and he kind of takes back what he said to her, and he says, peace out, and he runs away. And
fade out.
And then Sarah eventually runs into Ludo, who was kind of, you know, in a bad situation.
He's and he was a little bit of a pickle.
Yeah. And he was caught in a trap and Sarah freed him. And they became the besties of friends.
Besties. This part, I felt so bad for him because he was screaming, like kind of scary. If you didn't see it, you thought it was a monster coming after you. But he was like hanging from a tree and these little assholes, little goblins were poking him with little spears the whole time. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, he's just so sad.
I know. So I'm glad Sarah beat him away and helped him.
Fuck off. But eventually, Hoggle's trying to get out of the labyrinth himself and he encounters Jareth one more time. And Jareth gives him a peach to give to Sarah to eat that will basically make it so she won't be able to find the castle. So a little while later, they're trying to find the way, her and Ludo, and then they get split up and Sarah runs into this part of the movie that I've completely blocked from my memory with the fire gang.
And the fire gang. Anyway.
Like, I legitimately could not tell you before I watched it with Roxy. I couldn't tell you that this was in the movie.
And I think you're like, oh, that's right. This is the part that my brain just blocks out automatically.
Yeah, and I don't know why. It's not a terrible part. It's just, oh, I don't know.
Yeah. I get it. It was kind of like, I wasn't necessarily terrified, but it's one of those things that were kind of annoying to me because they kept fucking with her.
Yeah.
And then they wanted to take her head out.
For no
reason.
Head
off. And I was like, well, I know like you guys can do that, but she can't. I mean, come on. Like, look at her. She's different from you guys. And so like, I don't know. There's always something a little bit creepy about it, but yeah.
But eventually, Sarah, like Roxy said, they kept trying to take her head off and she was running away from them. She came to a dead end and boom, Hoggle is there to save her.
Woo,
hell
Hoggle.
Yeah. Which, you know, we now know he had an ulterior motive. Although at this time, he's starting to switch toward like actually wanted to kind of save her. He felt really guilty about having the peach that was going to, you know.
That was laced with a little bit of ecstasy, basically.
Just a little bit.
A little bit of a, gosh. Yeah. Yeah, he starts kind of getting a conscience, basically.
Especially after Sarah kissed him, thanking him, you know. So he really was like, oh, God damn it. But they make their way to the Bog of Eternal Stench, where they meet with Ludo again. And the three of them run into Sir Didymus and his shepherd dog steed, Ambrosius. I freaking love both of their names so much. I think that's why I remember them like the most in the movie.
Yes.
They were hilarious.
I know. They're my favorite too. I mean, besides Ludo. I love them.
And Ludo, yeah. Love Ludo too. Well, after a little bit of exchange, Didymus finally lets them cross because he's such a nice guy and definitely didn't give him any trouble whatsoever.
I'm sorry, I'm going to stop you right there. It's Sir
Didymus. Sorry, Sir Didymus. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. But anywho, after a little while of, you know, tomfoolery and shenanigans, Ludo shows that he can do his magical powers of summoning rocks to cross the bog of eternal stench.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. He's pretty powerful, you know. Eventually, the group starts to get hungry. So Hoggle gives her the peach. And she falls into a trance, which leads her to that fantastic, beautiful scene of the masquerade ball. Oh my gosh, this, like Roxy's already said it, it is so beautiful. Her outfit is, I think, what every girl wanted.
Yes, absolutely. It was just beautiful. I just love this whole thing. I always wanted to throw a masquerade party, and I just love it. And then Jareth sings a song too. Mm-hmm. I mean, David Bowie, obviously, duh, hello. And I just love the song. I just love this movie. And I just love this scene so much.
But this is when we really realized it's kind of problematic.
Yeah, that's right. That's, yeah.
Jareth in the song is like professing his love to her, you know, the 16-year-old girl that he stole her little brother. And yeah.
Okay. I will say you're not wrong, but the only part is that she technically didn't want him. She actually asked them to come get him and then she realized she fucked up. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, that's why she's here, to try to get him back, which he was gracious enough to even give her the chance. But yeah, you're right about this being problematic because of the age difference and everything. And, you know, when I was younger, I never thought about that. I never thought about, like, they realized he was way older and that she was only 16 at the time. Like, I don't know. My mind just didn't make that click, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah. So about that thing about UK versus the US, maybe the U.S. saw the problem. No, I'm kidding.
It's fine.
It's fine. Indubitably. Fine. It's an arranged marriage. But anywho, she realizes eventually that no, this isn't a real masquerade ball, and she is able to escape, and she finds herself with the old junk lady, and she's rescued by Ludo and Sir Didymus. But if I remember correctly, the lady was trying to make her one of them, like another trash lady, right?
Basically, yeah. So that like junk lady was like a hoarder.
Yeah.
And well, the thing is, when she woke out of that trance, she was back in her bedroom.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah. And then so then what happened was, like, she was like, oh my God, it was like kind of like a dream. But then all of a sudden this goblin lady's there and she's full of like, she's like a pack rat. And then Sarah, she's like, wait, I'm remembering something. I'm supposed to do something. She's like, oh, but why do you want to go out? Here's your Lancelot. Here's your favorite bear. Here's your favorite things. And this is your bedroom. Why do you want anything else? And then she remembers Toby. And she's like, oh, yeah, about that. I gotta get out of here.
I gotta fucking save my little brother.
Yeah.
Because I fucked up.
Yep. So she breaks the illusion. And then that's when everybody comes there, and then they go back on their adventure.
But they get to the gate of the castle. And it is guarded, but Hoggle comes to the rescue and he feels super guilty. And everybody's like, it's cool, bro. You were going to die if you didn't follow what he wanted you to do. You're just doing what you were doing to survive. So they forgave him and he was able to join them again.
Because they're friends now.
I was so happy.
So then at this point, Jareth is alerted to the group's presence and he sends the goblin army to stop them because he's like, I'm keeping the baby. You know what I'm saying? So Ludo summons a multitude of rocks to chase the goblins away. This whole fight scene ensues. There's this giant, like, robot that's being controlled by these little goblins. They have to fight off a bunch of the goblins that come and attack them. And Ludo did it the best way he could by summoning a bunch of rocks.
But Sir Didymus fucking showed his true colors.
That's true. I mean, he always kicks ass. So he came through. And this is the part where he kept yelling for his noble steed. Because Ambrosius is so scared. So he had to coax him by being like, if you don't come out here, I can't remember exactly what he said, but he's like he wasn't gonna feed him anymore. So he like, okay, I'm here, we're going, we're good. So they make it all the way to the castle, which at that point Sarah insists that she has to face Jareth alone. And so they, you know, the group, I love this part because they're like, well, if we're here, if you need us, just call us. And I'm like, oh my God. And so she goes, and I love this part too in the castle because it just kind of turns into this whole like artwork type thing. It's a room modeled after M.C. Escher's Relativity. And so the stairs are going all different kinds of places. It's just fucking awesome. And this part is another part where Dave Bowie sings another song. I love this song too. And again, professing his love for her. Yeah. Again, he's very romantic, okay?
Yeah, for a 16-year-old.
Anyway, yeah, so moving on. So then at this point, you know, she sees like Toby. He's like in this set of stairs and in the other one. And like they're up and down at some points and sideways. Mm-hmm. And she keeps trying to find him. And then eventually, finally, she comes up to Jareth. And she's like, you need to give me back Toby. I messed up. And then Jareth is like, listen, if you just get with me, like, you know, all your dreams will come true.
Be my queen.
And then she's like trying to remember the line from the book for like all of this to be over. Mm-hmm. And then she remembers it and it's, you have no power over me. And then he's like, fuck.
Ah, shit, she remembered how to read. This is why women shouldn't learn how to read.
So then basically the whole like enchantment breaks and they're back home. Toby is back in his crib, she's back in her room, and yeah, it's pretty crazy, dude. Pretty crazy dream. It's a fever dream, really.
Right. Pretty neat.
It's pretty neat.
But yeah, she realizes when she's back home that Toby actually means a lot to her, that she loves Toby. And then she goes and gives him her Lancelot teddy bear. But then she looks in the mirror when she gets back to her room and sees all of her friends from the labyrinth. Oh, but some of the fire gang is in there and I don't consider them her friends.
Right.
Because I don't run around telling my friends I'm going to cut their heads off. Well,
actually.
But no, it's just a really sweet wrap up to the movie. Just a reminder that even though you grow up, you still can be a child at heart, but you can always grow and learn from things. Sometimes grass isn't greener on the other side, that type of stuff. Yeah.
I love it. I agree with you. That's kind of always what I took from it, was that it was kind of like her giving Lancelot was her way of being like, you know what? I'm not saying she matured, obviously, 100%. Nobody right. does that in one day. But like, it was kind of like her way of like, I'm stepping into a different mindset, I guess, in a way. Like, I realize how important he is, you know, and I do love him. And the last thing, like you're saying, she was in her room putting away some of her things. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of sad in a way because I was like, well, that's like it is her childhood. It is stuff that she likes. But it's like you were saying, when her friend showed up, we're still here if you need us. And then she's like, I do need you, I'm always gonna need you. And they came like to life. So that was so cool. But anyway, and then Jareth of course was just hanging out outside in the window in his owl form, just peeking in there.
Hello, can I join?
Yeah.
Hello.
Plus
help, it's cold out here.
Yep. But yeah, oh my gosh. So I have so many memories about this movie. I remember constantly singing Dance Magic Dance. That's a bit of a banger, I will say.
That is. I just remember it was like the go-to sleepover movie, be it at your house or a couple of my other friends' houses. It's just like you put on The Labyrinth, you know you're going to like it, and you know that you can watch it without having to like fully invest in watching it, you know?
Yeah, it's just a good movie. It's a good family type movie and it's just fun. I like it.
I would say the one running line with a lot of my friends, the fact that it always just looked like David Bowie stuffed a bunch of socks in his pants.
Yeah, I remember watching it, like you were saying, with one of our friends. And I remember someone would always have to yell, socks, when he came on screen. Which, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I love his look, except for his pants.
Yeah,
there's something about those spandex pants, legging things that just were too big for him.
Yeah.
I'm like, really, people? We couldn't. I guess the budget went to the puppets, you know.
The puppets in the upper part of his attire.
Because that was glorious. Everywhere, like that hair, I know that took a lot of time. Oh, yeah. So
80s hair, baby.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like we were talking about the differences between watching it as a kid versus as an adult. As a kid, you didn't, at least I didn't really appreciate the ending and how all that symbolism of her, like, I need to stop being so selfish and self-centered and only concerned about my wants and needs to, you know, realizing there's more than just you in the world to worry about. There's other people you need to worry about and things like that. As a kid, you're like, oh, cool, she gave her little brother the teddy bear.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's just funny to be able to go back to movies that you saw as a kid and just actually understand the symbolism.
Exactly. Another thing with that point that you made was that, like, in the beginning of the movie, you know, she seemed like a little unsure of herself, too. And mm-hmm. also, to me, the symbolism with the book is, like, she could never remember the lines. So she always said, I can't ever remember these. And then at the end, she finds her power. And mm-hmm. with those words, you have no power in me, because she has found her own power. And I mean, whether or not that's the true symbolism of it, that's what I always got from it.
That's what you got from it. That is.
Exactly. So anyway, I always thought that was awesome, too.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't she put the book in the drawer?
Yep.
Yeah. So
that was one of the things.
Boom.
Yeah.
Ain't no man got any power over her.
Slay queen.
Unless it's consensual and she wants it.
And within the legal age range.
Yeah, especially that part.
Another thing that we actually, it's a new memory because, so this last time we watched it, I actually listened to the part where she's in the labyrinth in the beginning and she's, like you were saying, marking the stones on the floor to just mm-hmm. kind of, you know, keep her, kind of keep track of where she's going so she doesn't backtrack. And the people that live under there are like getting pissed and they're like moving them, turning them upside down to clean them probably. And then they start fucking with her because they're pissed. And there's one part they're coming out, shaking their fist. And then they're like, your mother's a freaking aardvark.
Because the beginning part is all like,
yeah. So, and I always thought that's all they did. Like, I'm sure they said something, but it always to me sounded like,
yeah.
So it's freaking hilarious.
I love it.
Oh my god. So this movie definitely is one of my favorites. I love it. I've had different copies of it. I've lost them all for different reasons, but my boyfriend got me a new copy and it's really awesome. And I just love it. It's so great. I love this movie so much. It was super fun.
It was. I just love going from like remembering to watch it as a kid and then as a teenager and now again as an adult. It's just so cool.
It was. It's really cool. Like you were saying, every time you watch it, it's different. Like mm-hmm. you think about it in a different way.
Uh-huh. Well, the next episode is going to be not Futurama, but we will do it, I promise. But it's going to be La Llorona.
Yes. So I'm really excited. And yeah, I know last time I was telling you, Nita, I was like, oh my God, I just want to move past that because we're supposed to be doing Futurama. But
it's cursed.
It's not cursed. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's okay. Just not the right time.
It was cursed, but we are removing the curse.
We are. We're going to be breaking that curse.
But make sure to follow us on all of our social medias. It's linked in the podcast and in the show notes.
All right, babe. You ready to go?
Let's get ready for the masquerade ball.
Ooh.
Toodaloo, fellow rebels. We'll be right back. But some of the Fire Gang is in there, and I don't consider them her friends.
Right.
Because I don't run around telling my friends I'm going to cut their heads off. Well.
Well, actually.
No.